Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of B2B marketing professionals and people interested in B2B marketing. It's run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for B2B marketers. Today, we've got over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Associate Director of BPE Search, Rowan Fisk, about using LinkedIn for recruitment. Managing Director of Green Target, Dafina Grabsey-Penny, will mix politics and marketing. And marketing consultant, Kate Denham, will celebrate some great business marketing. Lots to like, share and follow here, so let's get started. Marketers mainly look at LinkedIn as a tool for marketing their business. But what should they be doing if they're rather thinking about marketing themselves? I'm joined by Rowan Fisk, who is the director of BPE Search. Rowan, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm really well, actually. I'm really good. How's today treating you?
It's all right. I mean, it's a Friday at 3:45, so I could be a hell of a lot worse.
Absolutely. Well, that's good news. LinkedIn. Before LinkedIn, tell us a bit about BPE Search.
Cool. So we're an executive search firm. We specialize in senior appointments, predominantly on what I would describe as the front end of businesses. So product, proposition, marketing, digital partnerships, anything in that sort of space is our specialism. We do that with supporting businesses from SME through to FTSE 100 across a range of different industries, anything from FMCG, retail, charity, consumer goods. My personal network is mostly in sort of financial services and fintech and consumer services, but I get my oar in a couple of other things when I fancy a challenge.
Well, very good to hear. So, well, let's talk about the challenge of LinkedIn then. What do recruiters make of LinkedIn then?
It's simultaneously the best thing and worst thing that's ever happened to us, Dave. I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's the world has radically changed over the last 5 to 10 years. You know, when I started in the world of recruitment, this is 2009. I think maybe half of my colleagues were on it.
Right.
And to imagine a recruiter not on LinkedIn all day, every day now is absolutely balmy. Yeah. So, you know, I think the amazing thing about it is access to information. And that is both a brilliant thing and a horrible thing for us simultaneously. You know, a client comes to us and says, like, I want to recruit a marketing director, go and find us somebody. Theoretically, we should be able to find 99.9% of the people that can do that job. The challenge is they've got access to them as well, right? So we've still got to use in our repertoire, but as a tool rather than the crutch. Mm-hmm. I think my frustration comes from businesses that use LinkedIn and only LinkedIn. And they go, oh, we've got this fantastic piece of technology. This is brilliant. We're going to advertise, click the button, wait for the people to come in. And it's a super transactional process. I think amazing tool, but I think it's amazing if you use it as a tool rather than something to hide behind. And I think, you know, the market is evolving. I think it's being used in different ways, but it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays. The geniuses behind it have certainly figured out some brilliant solutions over the last few years.
Okay, so it's one tool in a recruiter's armory. How do they use that tool?
So, I mean, it's almost like our CRM, like our dashboard these days. You know, it's we use it in a bunch of different ways. we use it for business development, as I'm sure you would attest to. You know, I'm sure you've had your fair share of emails from pesky recruiters wanting to hire into your team. We use it to market map, to work out which businesses are growing, which ones are contracting, where people are moving from and to. But I think, you know, for the purpose of this conversation and for value to your audience, Dave, I mean, I think, you know, we are constantly on it from a perspective of candidate generation. You know, we're always looking for people that are specifically relevant to the search we're running, or we've got a bunch of super clever tech in the background that pulls people that are relevant to us and lets us know when they click that that magical "I'm open to new opportunities" button. It is something we're heavily invested into as a business. As a recruiter, you can secure a license. LinkedIn gives you this thing called a recruiter seat, and it's basically a platform that lets you use and manipulate and play with LinkedIn however you want. Yeah, I can go and say, I want to hire a marketing director who is based in London with 8 to 15 years of experience in financial services and an industry, and it will magically pop up all of the people that hit that criteria. And then I can then delineate that and break that down by who's open to new opportunities, who contacts, who replies to emails more regularly. You know, there's a bunch of super stuff behind the system that then allows us to go out and find the people that we need to find.
So conversely then, as a marketer, if I'm looking to market myself, how should I use LinkedIn to get the best value?
Okay, so I think people chronically underleverage this. There's loads of opportunity to get the most out of LinkedIn, and most people are barely scratching the surface. So, you know, if you're looking for a new job, I think the thing that the fewest people do is leverage their existing network. You can go onto LinkedIn, go onto the homepage, click on connections, and look at your mutual connections, and you should be able to scan through them and see where all the people that you've worked with, that you've connected with, that you've, you know, supplied into or received services from, have bounced about over the last few years. And it will surprise you. You know, there will be people in all sorts of interesting businesses that you didn't realize had popped up there. And so I think being aware of leveraging your network and knowing who's moving where and engaging with them is sort of vitally important. I think also the ticking open to new opportunities, this magical box that makes you suddenly more available to recruiters, is a fantastic tool. It is a great way for you to get found much more easily. You know, I might pull up a search on LinkedIn if I'm looking for a certain portfolio of people. I might pull up 2,000 people. I'm like, oh, I don't want to sift through 2,000 people. What's the quickest way that I can reduce and know that I'm going to get the most qualified people? I know, I'll tick, you know, show me the people who are specifically open to new opportunities. It suddenly reduces it to, I don't know, 300 people or something like that. Well, that's a much more digestible number for me to sift through with a cup of tea in hand on a Friday afternoon. So you will get found far more easily if you've ticked that magic button. I think that also, you know, what's really crucial is you've got to optimize your own page so that the people that you want to find you can find you. As a general rule, recruiters are looking for the industry that you've worked in. So I think a lot of marketers will put their industry as marketing and advertising, which came for us because it pulls up a million different people who are completely irrelevant to the search that we're doing. Now, if you work in insurance, put insurance. If you work in FMCG, put FMCG. If you work in the charity sector, put the charity sector. That will get you found in search and will mean that opportunities come to you far more easily. It's also really important to put a relevant job title in there. You know, if I'm looking for a marketing director, I'm going to search for marketing director, director of marketing, CMO, chief marketing officer, probably put head of marketing in there as well, that are looking to make the step up. But if you've got some strange fancy title, if you're associate director of communications or something like that, we're not likely to find you in that search. So, you know, have a think about reverse engineering it so that the people want to find you can find you. Yeah. Also, if there's products that you're a specialist in within your sector, you know, I do a lot of work in financial services. So one of my big clients is a credit card issuer. So I might look for a keyword of credit cards. You know, if you can get some stuff in there, which goes, okay, I know that if somebody is looking for somebody like me, they're going to find me. It will have a huge impact on opportunities coming up.
That's really, really helpful. Rowan Fiss, Director of BPE Search. Thank you very much. The world in 2021 is a deeply divided place, and it's difficult for any brands to stay on the sidelines. In the last year, business marketers have gotten involved on topics ranging from Black Lives Matter, climate change, and immigration. But should marketers stay impartial? And if not, what are the rules for getting involved? I'm joined by the Managing Director of Green Target, Dafina Grapsi-Penny, to talk about politics and marketing. Dafina, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Very happy to join your podcast today.
It's great to have you here. So before we dive into politics, tell us a bit about Green Target.
Sure. So for those who don't know Green Target, we are a strategic communications consultancy working with global businesses operating at the intersection of finance and technology. Our role involves helping our clients build influence with their customers, investors, policymakers, and regulators on issues that are critical to their business.
Well, that's very, very clear. And that means I think you're a really good person to talk politics with us and to tell us whether business, marketing and politics should mix.
In principle, no. But in practice, it is really unavoidable because, as you know, Dave, politics impacts policy and policy impacts businesses. So some businesses choose to get involved in politics because they have strong convictions around certain issues or ideological differences with the government in place, meaning that their business models are either under attack or at risk of being undermined. So to influence those outcomes, you really have to have a seat at the table and you have to be in the right room. So this is the context which makes the mix of politics and business marketing relevant.
So if it's difficult to avoid politics, can you give us some tips as to how businesses should approach politics?
I think businesses should seek to inform and influence from a very early stage. So we feel that building relationships, for example, before you need to call on them is really valuable as it creates an environment of trust. Another area where businesses can get involved is in terms of advocacy. We saw this with, I think you mentioned, the Black Lives Matter movement. Some companies such as Nike, for example, chose to take a stance, a very public stance on the issue. Whether that's right or wrong is not really for me to say, but in practice, they wanted to stand up alongside their global and diverse customer base, and they felt that there was not just a moral imperative for doing so, but also a business case. So that's really the, I suppose, where if there is a business case coupled with a moral imperative, then you've got the right combination.
And so I wonder, can you give us any examples of businesses that get that combination right, you know, that do this well?
I think the businesses that do it well are the ones that are not doing it visibly and not attracting the backlash. You kind of know you're doing it well if you're not attracting a backlash and if you're not doing it publicly. So it's all, from my perspective, it's all about influencing behind the scenes. I think this is more the case in the UK and the rest of Europe versus the US, where political donations, for example, are much more commonplace and they're widely reported on. There's a lot more transparency around that. And for example, in the US, it's a given that most companies will contribute to political campaigns, both at a federal and a state level. And it's about how they use that influence that matters.
And of course, as you say, this is a kind of tricky situation. So the pitfalls of bringing marketing and politics together are very many. I wonder if perhaps you can give us a few examples of where this can go wrong.
I think if you have a business which is run by a founder, then it's really difficult to decouple, for example, the founder's views, the founder and CEO's views from those of the business, particularly if both the founder and the business are successful and influential. And I think this is something that we saw during Brexit discussions in the UK and most recently during the US election. In the end, it's ironic that it was the business community that had to urge President Trump to accept the result of the election. And this became even more powerful when the call came from those who had actually supported the president throughout. So I think it's also worth considering that, you know, sometimes politics, whilst it can be helpful and necessary and a necessary evil, sometimes it can also get in the way of business. So you do have to have some sympathy for businesses and their interactions with politicians, because, for example, one such example is, you know, you've got the trade wars, the decoupling of the West from China. That makes it really harder than ever for businesses to just focus on business. They have to focus on political risk. They have to learn to navigate the geopolitical complexity of the world in which they operate. And in a way, if you take all of that into account, so businesses and marketeers need to be skilled diplomats more than anything else.
Well, as one skilled diplomat to another then, Dafina Grabsey-Penny, Managing Director of Green Target, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you very much.
There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by marketing consultant Kate Denham to celebrate it. Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be here.
It's good to have you. So tell us a bit about your work.
Sure. So I've been freelancing for about 5 months now. Okay. Just to give you a bit of background, I previously spent 9 years at Really B2B and then 4 years client side in a company, marketing to manufacturing, engineering and facility sectors.
Okay.
Currently in my freelancing role, I'm working with SME and SME B2B and B2B2C companies. I'm helping them to fine-tune their value propositions, generate leads and convert business. I focus on ensuring their messaging is right for their customer segments. So this involves helping my clients to uncover and promote the real value that their service or product is going to provide, and then getting that message to their customers across relevant channels. Typically, that involves email, social, search, and across their website, sales and marketing materials. I put a big focus on outbound as well as inbound marketing. Typically, my clients in the past and now want to see results fast, build and nurture relationships with specific companies. I think as long as you're creating helpful, relevant content and offering something that's going to help someone in their role, then delivering that message to them, as opposed to waiting for them to come to you, is incredibly important to any B2B business. Mm.
So I'm reckoning from all of that experience, you've seen a lot of great business marketing and communication. So what's caught your eye?
Sure. So my information consumption has changed quite a bit, actually, since I've been freelancing.
Okay.
I think that's come down to really, there's quite a lot of things I've had to learn about setting up my own website and just trying to get to grips more with digital marketing than I ever have done before. So I've been doing a lot of my own research, listening to podcasts. The big one for me that has really caught my eye, and not for the first time recently, but in my previous kind of roles in life, is HubSpot.
Yeah.
I think they just do an absolutely fantastic job. So I use the free version of their CRM for myself with the email tracking. And I've previously used the enterprise level as well for campaigns when I was at the agency.
Yeah.
So I already have a good understanding of what they do, and I'm obviously using their product. But, you know, whenever I've got a challenge or I'm trying to learn more about digital marketing, Google Analytics, that kind of thing, I've been doing online searches, and most of the time their blogs have come up in the search results. So they've obviously really mapped out well what kind of questions marketers are going to be having, so they can make sure they're always there when we are searching for those questions and our answers.
And so I agree with you. There's some great stuff from HubSpot, but what specifically is what impresses you about them and their marketing?
Well, I think their blogs are always really practical. They're always very to the point. The message is clear. They give you good steps to actually go away and create actions and get on really with things that you need to do. So, you know, I'm quite hands-on now, providing sort of services from strategy all the way through to actually generating leads for my clients. So, you know, it's just been such a good resource to be able to find their material online. And also I get their blog emails as well. So that's like a handful of topics within an email, and I can, you know, have a quick glance down and something might catch my eye. I want to learn a little bit more about something that, you know, I'm not quite so sure about. Go through to their blog and learn a bit more.
So in terms of what you've learned that you'll apply to your future work, is it the practicality, I'm guessing, and also there's kind of an almost kind of impulse approach to the way that they market that you reflect there?
Yeah, absolutely. They have obviously really well mapped out a whole range of questions that a marketer is going to have, particularly focusing on digital marketing, obviously. And they've got, you know, a wide range of resources as well that they offer for free, which is great. Particularly for small businesses. So obviously trying to get people in at like an entry level and they're building a relationship with them from there.
So kind of be practical, be on the moment and be free.
Good
advice. Yeah, that's brilliant. A marketing consultant, Kate Denham, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Rowan Fisk, Dafina Grapsey-Penny and Kate Denham. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And in the meantime, I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.